Tom Neary, Real 11. And I think we just left you bouncing around on a, what did you call it? A blood tub, Tom, wasn't it?
Yeah. With all the drones inside and all that stuff. Anyhow, we arrived at this place again, it was a town, and they took us off, and they took us into this big hole. Well, what I can remember, I was coming around again, and my mother stretched it all around where I were, and then one of the RMC came up, that's what I wanted to say, on the next thing, the Catholic priest came by me, he came up to me, and he anointed me with the last rites. Then he said to me, where are you from, Mary? I said, where am I from? He said, well, I'm from Preston. So we had a bit of discussion, and then he went away. Then they moved us again onto the ambulance. Kept going on, kept the vomiting, the only conscious. So eventually, I didn't know where we were. We landed and we were taken off the ambulance, and these two lads of Boy Scouts had short pants on, you know, and they took us into where we were going into, which was when the 5th British General, or 8th British General, in Brussels, 8th British General, and they went up this lift, and they took us into the ward, they must have dressed me and changed me, and this sister, you know, I can remember saying, she playing hell. She said, this is how many men is that this regiment has come in today that's fucking wet through. And she played out, it's a disgrace to the sort of his Lancashire men. And could we help it with the wet through in the snow?
This was a British...
British sister.
Sister, yeah.
Yeah, 8th British General Brussels.
Yeah.
So then, the next thing, the three or four fellows round the bed. We're only going to see how we are, and we can find out what's what. What I can remember is sticking pitch things into me, in my feet, and asking how much clothes were moving, and with the arms, with the things that I can remember them chafing all my finger to see how far, and the iron said that lucky was first, somebody was. Then the other look at me, he said, well, it's only preliminary, but we think you're lucky, we don't think you have a fracture. What do you want to eat? You can have anything you want. I said, I don't want anything, which happened, I didn't want anything. So they left me. So then the sister came up and she gave me this lily. It looked like I'd come with this ulcer. I can make a little frothy.
Oh, yeah.
And she gave me this here, and of course, I thought, my lovely, and came back again. So all the lads in the ward said, you're bloody for it, man, you hear it. This is what you get, you know. I mean, no bloody sympathy, you know. This is what you get. What I said, you do. So it's gone by. I was injected every 3 hours. They must have been kind of seen me doing that.
All right. Yeah.
I think it must have been. Anyway, the injector, it kept coming. So in the morning, they looked at me away. That's good and right as that. So they shaved all the air off.
Yeah.
So I was occupied, I would be going to the theatre. So when I got in there, this doctor who'd seen me the night before said to me, Neary. Oh, he said, oh, Neary. You know, old lady was DC, was the IMC, but he was in the First World War, and he was out of sense, of course. Oh, he said, never mind. He said, you'll be in England in a few days, he said to me. I was too old really to
take it in.
It didn't really matter, you know. I didn't get me outside, I wasn't bothered. Anyhow,
you didn't feel any pain at that stage, Tom, did you?
No, I kept going off.
Yeah. Conscious, unconscious.
Lift off, yeah. And then be sick.
Yeah.
And then stop. But after I'd done this year, when I thought it was the end, I didn't know it was in demos all the time. She gave me this injection, you know.
Yeah.
Anyhow, and you took me into the operating theatre, you had a left face down.
Mm.
And you're on the new job. I could actually, and it shows it that I could taste it in the scalp, all the way around.
The needle?
Must have been, I couldn't see it on the moon when I felt.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't hurt me.
Yeah.
That, that was a bit bothered, you know.
Yes.
But it didn't. And then, after a while, then I could see the cut. We've been it wrong, you know. What do you say? And I was feeling dry, thirsty. Really thirsty. So when he's finished, he wiped my face and wiped my eyes. He always smelled when he come in. That's what I'm saying.
So it was only a local anaesthetic that he put in,
yes.
Presumably.
Yeah. Some say they don't give you things like that that they didn't do, put you to sleep, but they said, they don't let it through or not.
I don't know.
But for me, that is what they did.
Yeah.
He said, and he did that, and he took me back in the ward. Well, they're off. I kept going, unconscious. I wasn't going to sleep, then I was just going, you know. But then when I woke up, there's this young woman sat alongside the bed. She was there for a couple of days or so, And then I had a shave, and this was like a normal. So I looked at like that, and I go off and come back. And then I found out I couldn't see. When I say I couldn't see, that's my eye, it was like looking through a fog.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I couldn't read because I couldn't read it, but it was like a silly image. And went from there, and after a few days, but I'd waken up, and the pain, I'm not exaggerating, but I'm young, and you're strong, and I never asked for anything, from here to the middle of my back.
That's the back of your head to the middle of your back?
Oh, yeah, it would have been bad. And I heard some saying, asking for some, no, you can't earn enough tablets, but whoever it was, I thought, sod that, I'm not having enough tablets. But I kept going off and coming back, so you're always there this last
time.
And then after about 3 or 4 days, I don't know, pretty good, I was wanted to go to the toilet. So there's nobody there, so I go up and said, where's the toilet? They said, it's over there. Hey, you don't want to do that, they said, you don't want to do that. Shelter, you're coming, you'll do it. I said, bugger off, no. They said, they'll let you know. But I stayed from bed and I went to the business. Then I came back and he shouted, sister. So she said, what minute? She said, Neil, you've been to the toilet. I said, you're not right, you're back in. You know.
Because they would have brought you a bedpan or something, presumably. But it was more dignified, I suppose, to go in there as far as you were concerned. Yeah. Just stop a second. Okay, just continue that, please, Tom.
Right,
again.
So, I got an ear bashing and going to the toilet. Then they came along, will we shave you? Anyway, I said, no, I'll shave myself. So I shaved myself in the fashion. And then after about 10 days or something like that, it would be the doctors coming down and examining you. But it weren't the same doctors who said I was going to go to England, it was somebody else. So they probably didn't materialise. So they kept giving these injections for a long many days, they were quite a few days. So then they said, after that week, he came round and said, I think it's time in a few years went out, tried a bit of a, went out, try and get out and do a bit.
Yeah.
So they gave us a blue, we dressed in blue with a white shirt and a red tie, you know. And I said, I can't go. To be careful, I said, I'm not good. All right, so he got me some blues.
Yeah.
So we went down into Brussels, well, went somewhere in Brussels, I couldn't say where I went, I can't remember. But we went to the, I went to the aerosity at the air time, did whatever the left of it, you know.
Because you'd have been shaved for the operation.
So I came back from there, and then that first time I went out, he said it did make it good to it, but when I got outside, nerves were in the traffic and that. But I were all right after that.
Understandable, I would think that.
I was about a week, when I came back, a few days, and then they said, you're on a zap. I didn't sound like we're moving that way. So I had to go down underneath into the stores. So when I get down into the stores, said who I was, what it was, this doorkeeper went for stuff, come back, throw something in front of me. And when I picked it up, it was maturing.
Mm.
It was slimy,
mm.
It was stiff, saturated in blood. Well, a week after that, I said, don't let me do it. I thought, I won't let me do that. I threw back at him.
Yeah, who gave you this, Tom?
Storman.
Storman. And where were you now?
Underneath the hospital.
Underneath the hospital. Well, you would think it's the least you could get those circumstances, wouldn't you?
So I got the suit. I didn't give it out of question, I remember, but when I'm going out of the ward, off the ward, to go past to get onto the trucks to catch the train, we're going to Levain, or Leuven, as they call it.
Yeah.
The sister shouts and says, here, eh, going out saying goodbye. So I say goodbye to them. Then, yeah, we get on the train, and we have no money, and we landed at Louvain station, night there. The then still waiting for the outside. Cold, still snow about underground, miserable. So we set off, performing to on the three, marched up the hill, we're going to the camp. So halfway up the road, he said, it smells kooky. Well, he said, yes, mate, it's good. He said, there's a shop there, mate, after five, so stop there, you won't get any.
Yeah.
So we went in, maybe about 30 of that, so on. He went in and this lad came out and he said, here, come. I said, come on, here. I said, what, I'm not sure. He said, no, I'm going up here.
Hmm.
And he's a little Welshman.
Yeah. Would he have been in from the same division, sir, do you think?
Yeah, just a little Welshman.
Yeah.
And we were real mates. And we was moved up into the camp in the morning following. Grand room in his barracks. Going to the airport and everything. After all the land. Going from the medical officer to report, he looks at the report that's come with you and assesses what you do, whether you're going to move on or what. So he said to me, HQ, all duties, that's it, like, you know.
That means go back to HQ?
No, HQ is what you do nothing.
Oh, I see.
All I had to do was stop in the camp.
Yeah.
So yeah. I didn't have any praise, I didn't have anything.
Yeah.
But the other fellas had. But for me, it was excused all duties.
Oh, sorry, excused. Sorry, Tom, I thought you said HQ.
Excused.
Okay.
Excused
yeah.
all duties.
Yeah.
So when we got back, we fed up in there. So there was a sergeant called Doherty of a Scottish regiment. There was a little Welshman who was so good. I'm not thinking his name. There's another one called Muir, which is Scottish. So I said, oh, we're not stopping this camp, so we were on parade, 6 or 7 or whatever it was, and we marched out for the gates, went to the pictures.
Mm.
Well, we did that once or twice, that was another thing, that's all we did. And then, we put on the draft, and only met one of our days,
yeah.
And that. And we went, and I landed at Burghley Airport.
Mm.
When we get to Burghley Airport, miserably wet, you know, horrible. This camp, the Hollywood camp, lined up outside. The Sergeant Major were there, was I knew his brothers and that from Paddyham, Paul Nuttall, who was supposed to at one time be the Sergeant Major of the Army. He's never been in action, he was still in there, he was still there. So he sent us two boats and all the rest of it. So then the lad said, oh, look at Naffy. Brian's doing was all over there, kind of. Anyhow, he'd gone. So I all right, catch it up. So it was still icing all around. Come out, I went down this blue path and down and banged myself. I loved it, why didn't I shoot me on it?
We didn't bang your head again, did
yeah,
you?
I did, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So I picked myself up and all I could think about is I'm losing it.
Yeah.
Clean ridiculous, isn't it stupid?
It is stupid, yeah. Yeah.
So I go into the camp there, I don't have a tea or something, I come back to the service and nothing is not here, so not much.
Hmm.
Miserable, go in, go up in the morning, get out, on parade, drafted to February 28th, 73 years. So I went back to where I came from.
Yeah. So now, where are you going back to now, Tom?
So I set off from the car and I landed. We arrived at Helmond in Holland.
What sort of date?
Asking a question now. I was wondering on the 7th of January. It would be the end of January.
Yeah, I would guess that would be.
Yeah, the last days of January.
Yeah.
27th. So when I got into there, I found out in the area that was headquarters in these and the signals in the headquarters was in this Catholic school near the course near Joseph Garda, St. Joseph's School, I thought. And I went to the MO. When the day after they'd done this big card for the day, learning the new students what they had to do, and I'm sat there, John Ben said, "You don't want to be here." Yeah, I didn't tell them what to do, or, you know. Just So then, I'm going this day, the big stairs going upstairs, and he's coming down with me as everything, and I'm just going to go, "Oh, hear it," he said. He said, "John, then, how are you?" "Oh, so well," I said. He said, "Where do you get your master then?" "You look after yourself," he said. "Be careful."
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah, good. Difference between between officers.
It's the man I was a senior to.
But just the reasons that they're in Helmond, Tom. Because there's something else coming up in the near future, isn't
That's
there?
Right.
And I just wonder why they're in Helmond.
So what they're doing there, they're doing exercises for the attack into the Reichswald.
Right, okay.
There's a forward slope, but it was the rain then, the rain in the middle. They're going to these woods and doing these night attacks and practicing for all that.
Yeah.
So
This again is because prior to the Ardennes, you were training for Veritable, which was to attack the Reichswald, which was cancelled for the Ardennes. Now the Ardennes is finished, so you're coming back to plan one, for the Veritable.
And of course, when we're in the Ardennes, we're in 34.
Yeah.
But really, we're going to Tropical.
Yeah.
So, while I was there, we got the next day, so Dickie Hyde, who was a company clerk in the world, and called me. "Oh, Tommy," he said, "you're due in 6 days or 5 days to leave. Can you pick everything, you know, and we got it, if you landed in London?" I said, "Oh, okay." So John Bennett said to me, "Right, we're moving up to Eindhoven, Tom. You're on command set." "Okay." So we moved up at night time in the vehicles, quietly, with only a little light showing in the vehicle. And we moved up into Nijmegen.
Yes, Nijmegen.
It was quietly put into this big factory, it was a shoe factory or something.
Yeah.
Biggest parking was in there, another company was in something else.
Yeah.
So it was 5 o'clock in the morning, all hell let loose. Knew what happened. We opened up the guns for a range and quiet, and it dropped and it shook and it banged and it. And quietened off a bit. The CO came round about 9 o'clock. Telling us what they expected us to do, which was Colonel Allen, roughly what it was, and the two phases. One phase we went with one brigade, when we'd done that with that brigade, we went into the sub brigade. The East Lancashires would be the second part to take up. The 71st Infantry Brigade would do the initial part, going up to the forest, then the East Lancashires would take over them and they captured these and carry on.
Because the East Lancashires were part of the
5-8 Brigade.
Yeah.
So I run command set right through to dinner, the lunchtime, 12 o'clock, it's 11:30, 4 o'clock. Maybe eventually we got the message to go through. So I was on course, that was not time, then decided to call them. So we went forward, and of course it was going dark, and of course the usual thing started to rain, and it rained, and it rained. Mm. As we're going through, in the northern end of the hill, as we're going through, and they're on fire.
Yes.
And in the night, you could see the silhouettes going past.
Yeah, I think there's one there called Grosbeak.
That's it, that's the name.
Mm.
And they're on fire, and then you can see the men passing.
Yeah.
40 yards, there we go. Mm. And we're totally getting into the forest. Now, when we hit the ship, the barrage is going over, and it's rocking. And in all my life, that was the only time it really got me. And it shook, and it rocked, and it was not noise, it was stupefying.
Mm.
You know, it was like a nightmare.
That was one of the biggest barrages of the war so far, I believe, wasn't
it,
Sumner?
It was the biggest, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, but right, so there was all the trouble when the guns firing on a core front, which of course was a truck core. So we get into the forest, the tanks are supposed to be there, but we can't get in.
And the other thing just to mention here as well is, as soon as you go into that forest, you've entered Germany.
Yeah. So the East Anxious in that sector were first into Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we get in, the trees are all smashed across with the ballard, of course. It's black, tanks couldn't come, couldn't see where you're going, because it flashed through down the dark blacker than ever.
Mm.
The trees made it worse, the rain's coming down, so what they did, they marched on a compass. So we marched, and eventually, when it came dawn, still pouring down, we're on the top of this steep slope. And the front of us, the road went across the front.
Hmm.
This is where the graveyard is now.
Yes, I know the road.
But it would appear, see, when they told us that the right small forest had been split up into sections. There were three roads, it was roughly 7 mile deep, or something like that.
Yes.
And across it, there were three roads, and across it, horizontal, the front three, and each one had a name.
Hmm.
Like Nevada was one, I remember that. And then, running vertically was cutting through the forest, and each one of them had a number, so that if they could get through, you could give the bearing.
Well, another one was called Utah.
That's right, Utah, Nevada, and that. Yeah. So, while we were there, there was a chug chug chug, and this year it was a tractor, they thought it was a tank gun. He shot it, it was a tractor pulling guns, so they finished that off. And then, more shelling, decoupled his right up front door, down on the bottom of the road. The signal officer comes up, he was an officer from the Green Howards. I said to him, anyway, we're relaying that line down to the company.
Yeah.
John Bennett went with me.
Yeah.
I laid the line down, overcame the shower.
Yeah.
We dived in the trench, one of us don't move, came over again, and we got back out of the way. The line was through, eventually we moved across that space into the next part of the forest. Hacked some mine, mostly mined all around, still no tanks, everything was up to your knees in blood, fighting from tree to tree, as we're going up through the tracks. So that is how we've progressed so far, night after night. Incessant rain. One night it was flashing and banging the guns as usual. But in shelter in this German dugout, it was old clothes and easy with bunk beds. So we got a bit of shelter there for that night. Moved up again, got into this opening this particular day. Down come the 8th programme on us again. And I'm led there in the middle. Keep counting. If you're going to attack and you're going fast to get out of it, but you're pinned down, you cannot move. And that is, in that case, well, I remember quite well, but a soldier is, I knew it was very close, it was like you're doing, but, and I thought, this is what I actually thought, how can I remember? And this is what I actually said. I know other people may hear this, and they won't understand, but for every man, has a different way. And what I did say was, Holy Mother of God, I don't want to be wounded or killed for another sake, see how it comes to you, you know, you're only a human being. But if I have to be, don't let it. I won't be burdened to finish me off, you know.
Yeah.
You see, you're not frightened, you're frightened, but you don't ask for yourself. Well, I mean, I know they don't either of them, but this is, I know it was all rough, you know. That's what I can handle. I thought, hey, I think my mother is a killer, like you said, very grand. But if I am, finish me off, I don't want to be a burden, you know. But it passed, of course, it passed.
Well, I was going to ask you, Tom, then, just there, because I just can't imagine how you can get through after what you've just come through in the Ardennes in December, and now you've gone straight into this horrendous battle in the Reichswald Forest.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm only one of many, aren't I? Only one of many. See, as you go along, stages and stages, it's a weighing down process. But you can't do it otherwise, because all you come to is your brothers, you know. Are the demands that you must do what you have to do. You must all together to help one another. It is not King Country. But you're both an Englishman or whatever it may be. Of course you are. And no German's going to dominate. That is something else. I'm talking about myself. But it is the strength of the British Army is regiment, a battalion. You know, your Lancashire men or London men, and the London men, the Lancashire regiment. But you're one unit, and he's a fellow man, he's a brother, a comrade. And though you're only a small cog, you have duty demands that you, if you need an outlet, you couldn't think of yourself.
Yeah.
Look at me, weak bit, I can't help it.
Well, I don't know, I understand it totally, Tom.
When you're young, you don't. There's no time for tears. There's no time for sentiment. You have a job to do, and you do it. And if you have to kill, you kill. But you don't do it to save. But as the years pass, you see, the memories come, the faces, and the voices. I'm a real soft. You know?
Well.
Anyhow, so we get in there, we get further up, and we dug in again. There's more shelling. And I'm laying this line up to Bob and them.
Bob is with A Company.
Yeah.
And you're laying the lines to the forward rifle companies.
Trying to get through, because if you can't get through on the radio, the bigger sets of us couldn't get through. It was screened by the forest. And it was hopeless. As regards communication by air, it was non existent. One forward observation officer put it on the call, outside a corner. And it was intermittent communication to get the guns to fire back. So all you could do was to go by and keep communication by a runner. Because lines, they were moving and lines were moving. But anyhow, for this night, we dug in, kept shelling, and was staying for the night, obviously. So I was in this trench, and so another nice fella came, Sergeant Crawley. We'd had that many casualties, and the men that were getting promotion weren't getting it. The signal officer had already left us, who joined us. Lieutenant Taylor from the Green Howards, I remember his name, who I met many years after. He went back sick with no signal officer. He said, we don't use that anymore. The signal sergeant had done them, John Pennick, the land sergeant, and he showed his arm, he went right through them. But a nice fellow, Crawley. But find where B Company are, will you? Tom, I said, yeah. We have to change dark. Tracks across to this. I said, where are they? Down there somewhere in the forest. So I went down this track and we get B Company. Another bloody dicky word, B Company. So I come to venture to this open space again, where this horse in the forest is out. Space for trees all around. So I went out into the open trees, can't see anybody, and there's a log, and I sat down missing a log. And I looked down, there's nobody, can't be out here, there's nobody. I thought, but the other thing's one man's land.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I got up and come back. I said, I couldn't find him, so I said to God, I can't find him, I said. So I went out again under about 30-40 yards and thinking the track needed dealing, you see.
Yeah.
You can't say, hey, can you?
No, no, wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah. So then we moved on again, and this place with John Bennett and me and Lam, this slip tents and we covered up a cover from this, the airburst and mortar bombs and the shells. So I must have been that jiggered. There'd been heavy bombardment and we took cover and it quietened it off. And I woke up, they'd left me. John Bennett and Tony Lam. So I popped my head out in this trench and it's gone dark. Hear it? Yes. Oh, here's something with it. Here, swap trench here. You bugger off. Nigger quilter it was.
It was what? Oh?
Nigger quilter.
Right.
And they call him that because he'd been out in India years and years and he's right black.
Yeah, yeah. Out of town.
So he was coming. Jim Morrison. No, we know it's a white. So I went further on the bench there. Then in more heavy shelling, and I said, John, let's dig into the side of this bank. We're doing it, do it like that to get a bit of cover. We've got more around.
Yeah. Okay.
Then, when dawn comes, the only good in that case is going to the fire after this. I thought there's something going here. So then the day after, he said to me, is you for leave, Tommy? Go and go to the MO